Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And before we get to our special guest this evening, I want to once again comment, as you watch the price of gasoline falling at the pumps, you have to ask yourself, why is this happening? Well, for the same reason the price went up here a while ago, it's all manipulated. I mean, you have five mega corporations that control the oil industry in the United States here. And, of course, that is BP and, of course, Royal Dutch Shell. BP largely controlled by the British royal family. Royal Dutch Shell by the Dutch royal family. And then Exxon, Chevron, and Conoco here in the United States. And, of course, at least the first two are Rockefeller controlled, and probably the third is as well. Under any circumstances, they're dropping the price of oil to get the Republicans re-elected. Whether they're re-elected or not, they certainly don't want people to be disturbed as we go into the November elections. And the same thing, they're keeping the stock market up. I mean, there's no reason why it should be up at all. It is up simply because it's being manipulated up. And as Edward Bernays said so well, the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this essential mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the real ruling power in our nation. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. And that's exactly what's going on today, as we are being lulled into a false sense of everything is just great, as our leaders are planning on plunging us into a war in the Middle East. And without divine intervention, I see no way we're going to be able to avoid World War III. But before we can do that, why, we're going to have to get through the election here. And they certainly they will want to maintain their control over both houses of the legislature. And I don't even know whether it'll make any difference if the Democrats get in. I think that the power that be are intent upon taking us into World War III as a jumping off point towards the new world order. Well, as that is with the background, our special guest this evening is Dean Gotcher, who is going to be up in the Spokane area in the near future, putting on a program. And Dean is one of the best educated people, understanding the philosophy of what's going on and how really our whole attitude towards life is controlled by those people who control the discussion. And of course, they get us to go along with their agenda without even realizing we're being manipulated. Dean Gotcher, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's great to be with you, Stan.
Well, why don't you pick up the story? First of all, why don't you tell our listeners where you're going to be speaking, and we'll get that out several times during the hour.
Okay, I'm going to be Friday at Calvary Chapel. That's 51 West Hastings Road, 511, excuse me, West Hastings Road in Spokane. Again, that's Calvary Chapel, 7 p.m. Friday, 511 West Hastings Road.
All right, fine. And is there anybody, telephone number or anything to call if you're coming?
No, none that I have here. They can check our website, authorityresearch.com, and I may tonight just go ahead and put a contact number they can call.
All right, fine. Is there a charge to get in?
No.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, Dean is going to be telling us this evening about so many of the things that are going on, the games that they play with our minds, and basically, what do you call the process by which we're being manipulated?
Well, I've coined the word diaprax. I talk about the process, the dialectic.
Hold that thought right there. Pick up the story there, Dean.
Okay, I talk about the process called the dialectic, Hegelian philosophy. He didn't come up with it. He just put it in a format for political and educational use. And I also explain praxis, which the name for the national test for teachers is praxis. And it's very important that we understand that these terms. I merged the two and formed diaprax as a word. But it's a procedure to move people from their original position. It's what happens to politicians in subcommittees. And so in the meetings, I explain how the manipulative method is being applied by the facilitator, what the purpose of that environment, they call it climate control, environment control, and the purpose for facilitation is to make change easy. And the making of change easy is to change how the person thinks. And it's important that we understand that there are different ways of thinking. In fact, God says, my ways are not your ways, neither your thoughts my thoughts. As far as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. These thought systems or patterns are referred to as paradigms. And we've done what they call a paradigm shift. We've changed the way we think, and it's important that we understand what we have shifted from and what we've shifted to and how it's happened. And in the meeting, I will explain briefly. I won't have a lot of time to cover this. I have more information on our website. But the history behind how this all happened, lots of books written. A book I recently came across, I'd had it for some time, but Irvin Laszlo, who set up the Club of Rome out of Princeton, his book, A Strategy for the Future, talking about general systems. His whole agenda was how to bypass the traditional channels of top-down decision-making, how to bypass a constitutional republic form of government, how to bypass Robert's Rules of Order and parliamentary procedure. He also states that by the use of consensus, and we hear this term used all across our nation, not only in government, but in education, in the workplace, and even in the church. He states consensus formation is both a personal and political step. So just by bringing an elected official into a consensus environment, it's going to change him personally, and it is also a shift or a change in political systems.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dean Gotcher, and he's talking about something that's called diaprax. It's the dialectic analysis, the dialectic technique that is being used today to alter the perception of our leaders. He mentioned, of course, that often this dialectic procedure is being used in congressional committees to shift the beliefs of the congressmen and the senators so that they'll go along with the agenda. It's used in meetings. It's used in your local planning commission meetings. It's used in meetings that are put on, you know, to convince the public that there is a plan and you better go along with that. And, of course, they have this idea of consensus. We're not going to vote on it. We can't have people with fixed ideas. We're going to make you believe the way we want you to believe. And, of course, a beautiful example of that, a little off the subject, but the way that they've shifted the attitude of the American people from what it was just a little over 5 years ago to where it was today. 5 years ago, why, nobody in the United States wanted to go to war in the Middle East. Today, there are literally thousands of our leaders who are trumpeting the idea we have to go to war in the Middle East. We've just got to go to war in the Middle East. If we don't go to war in the Middle East, why, we're going to end up being in a war. So that's why we've got to go to war, so that we won't have a war. And it's amazing how you can, by repetition and by these clever techniques used in the media, but I think what Dean is talking about is primarily in meetings, to begin to shift people's ideas so that you can change their whole worldview. And no, they take on an entirely new belief pattern. Would that be a fair statement, Dean?
Right. It is to change how each citizen is to perceive how solutions or policy is made. And that includes the home, how we relate with our children. It includes the workplace, how we relate with those we work with, education, what the relationship between the teachers and the students, and from, in essence, from the daycare center to the nursing home, and even prenatal. As I mentioned earlier, Laszlo, in his book, A Strategy for the Future, states that consensus formation, he stated that it's not only a political change, but a personal change in a person. He says it is a precondition of all further steps, big and small. That's why I focus on the consensus process, or this diaprax. And it's important that we understand the role of the facilitator is to control the environment. You are seen as an element. And as a lab technician, the facilitator has to identify, Kurt Lewin, for instance, would refer to this as force fields. You would come into a meeting with a particular way of thinking. If you were traditional in your way of thinking, that would be referred to as patriarchic or didactic, and that language that you would carry in with the meeting into the meeting would be is and not. In other words, this is my property and not your property, and so you'd go to the meeting to make sure that your property was treated with respect to your ownership. You would say, this is my child and not your child. So you would go to the school board meeting with the intent to make sure that you were the one who was in authority over your child and somebody else wasn't taking your child away from you. It's found in math. 2 + 2 = 4 and cannot be any other number. This sounds so simple, and yet the dialectic, which recognizes thesis, recognizes the is and not, in other words, I am the parent and you are not when you tell the child. They can't go out and they try to get you in a dialogue and get you to move from your position and become equal with you, and you just say, well, no, you're not going out because I said so. And so that because I said so is position, and it's a position of authority. The facilitator's whole agenda is to remove the restraining language from policy, because if he can do that, he removes the restraining power on government. And then government can do whatever it wants to, and if you can succeed in doing this to the people as well in the workplace and in education and church, then the people will go along with it.
And because they use this in churches, too. I think this is one of the hardest things for many of our listeners to understand, because most of our listeners would be coming from a Christian or Judeo-Christian perspective, that they use these techniques. And these are simply techniques having nothing to do with Christianity, but they use these techniques in churches to force everybody into the same mindset, into the same thought process.
And you mentioned the right word, it's force. It's personal, it's feelings. You come into a meeting and you make a statement supporting the position of the truth that you've held to the past. Somebody's told you the truth, and you see the group compromising. You come in and you say, well, you cannot do that, or must not, or thou shalt not. And all of a sudden you find today in these facilitated meetings, you're going to be labeled negative and divisive and hateful, intolerant and prejudiced and maladjusted and a lower order thinker. And maybe if you raise your voice because nobody's listening, you're going to be labeled an aggressor, a blocker because you insist that what they're doing is wrong and you're not willing to go with the flow.
I think one of the techniques I love is that in the church, the people who don't want to go along with the new ways, the new religion, the new music, they're called pillars. They're holding up the church. They're holding up the church from moving forward, and you've just got to get away. You've got to do away with those people because they're standing in the way of progress. And so how they use these terms, the pillars of the church, at one time it was a praiseworthy thing, and now, of course, the pillars are holding things back or holding them up. Isn't it amazing how they're able to change our perspective, Dean?
Right, and you know, I've heard ministers referred to by those who do this facilitation, those who preach the word, as barnacles. They're stopping the ship of progress. And so lots of terms to make you uncomfortable, and it doesn't take you very long in a meeting to sense the pressure. And it's all about language. Whoever defines terms for you controls your life. It's important to understand that patriarchal didactic language is and not. You find this in the garden. God is the one who's in authority, and he's the one, therefore, who puts a thou shalt not in the garden. You as a parent are the one in authority, so you put the thou shalt not in your child's life. You're the one in authority if you own property, so when somebody's working for you, you're the one who puts the thou shalt not in their life and what they can or cannot do to your property. And same thing in the Constitution. Who put the thou shalt not in the Constitution? Congress shall not. Well, we don't understand what we've lost. You put the thou shalt not in the Constitution. And how you do that is you vote for a representative who wants to limit the power of government in your life. And so that representing of a negative position, negative to the power of government, the restraining language of government, you send him to a subcommittee. He gets in a room with a facilitator, a diverse group of legislators, and maybe unelected officials as well. They dialogue to a consensus over social issues innate that facilitated meeting, and you just lost your representation. It's important to understand the process. The Bible says we're not to be ignorant of Satan's devices. The language, the best way I can explain it, is in the traditional home. You tell your child they cannot do something. The first thing they want to do is to get out of the choices they have after you've said you cannot. The choices they have is either obey or disobey. And in the garden, this process is found, Genesis 3, 1 through 6. Adam and Eve disobeyed, and that was a traditional paradigm, but they did it in such a way that they could justify it, and that's the trick. That's the trickery of the dialectic process. It is how to change the way we think. We're not thinking anymore of right and wrong and black and white and light and dark and sheep and goats and heaven and hell, which is the Word of God. It's contrast. God is holy. We are not. That's why I started with that verse, my ways are not your ways, as God says.
And I think as you talk about the Garden of Eden and, of course, what happened there, they had a facilitator in the Garden of Eden.
Right.
That was Lucifer. That was
the very same procedure called the dialectic. Right. That is the consensus process. Now, if you tell your child they can't do something that they desire to do, and that's the educators love these words like inclination. I tell people, okay, you put a car on an inclination, and it follows its natural inclination without any restraint. What happens? Well, it ends up at the bottom of the hill in a junk pile. And that's our culture. We have removed the restraining language that comes from the traditional home that shapes culture. And it's deliberately done because the traditional home, men like Wilhelm Reich, who is very popular from a lot of social engineers, Abraham Maslow and Carl Rogers and others, saw him as sort of the essence of the motion of justification. And Wilhelm Reich saw the large family in Germany, where he came from before he came to the U.S., as a cause for nationalism. And in essence, what happens is when you have so many children, after a while, you're not going to dialogue with them. You don't have time. You just say, you know what, you do what I tell you to do, and they say, why? To get you into dialogue, to move you away from this right and wrong and black and white way of thinking, to become equal with them. And you don't have time to become equal with them because you have things to do, so you say, because I said so. And if they don't listen, then there's a use of force. That is a traditional patriarchal system that's found in Hebrews. God chastens those he loves. The traditional home chastens the children they love.
Well, of course, what they want to do is get away from the absolutes of
yes.
Right and wrong. What they want to do is get us to change our attitudes to go along with that of the original facilitator.
That's right. Now, the language as you follow this is important. The is and not language of the traditional home has to be challenged if you're going to get to a global society.
And so it's really all about transforming society
The
right. process is underway. Everything is in place. All we need to do is, well, just one more major catastrophe, and everybody's going to be willing to give up everything and join into this wonderful new utopia that lies ahead. Well, Dean, go ahead and pick the story up.
Okay, now, since I've explained the traditional home, Karl Marx understood this. If you do your research, follow the book chase, you know, who influenced whom, sort of like following money, you know, who influenced whom, the popular book today for education is referred to as Bloom's Taxonomies. Every teacher in America is certified off of those works. Bloom says on the page 32 of the first book, we recognize the point of view, in other words, our paradigm, is that truth and knowledge are only relative and there are no lasting truths for all times and all places. So if you accept that, then the parent doesn't have the right to say, because I said so. That forces the parent into dialogue. You've got to find equality with the child. You've got to make sure the child understands emotionally and intellectually the act that you're asking them to limit themselves in participation with. And in essence, you have to become socialist in your structure, in your home. And so Bloom then is simply paraphrasing Karl Marx, because Karl Marx stated, in the eyes of the dialectic philosophy, nothing is established for all times and all places. Now, the problem to this dialectic globalist system is the negative language. Because you can say 2 plus 2 is 4, and somebody else can say 2 plus 2 is 5, and we can all get along. We don't have a problem until you say 2 plus 2 is 4 and cannot be any other number. That's limiting language. And so when you come into the room with limiting language, see, that's negative. That's a negative force you're bringing into the room. And the role of the facilitator is to neutralize. They care about you. They don't want to lose you. They want to convert you. So they first have to neutralize the effect that you have on everybody else in the room. So when you come into the room with truth, the facilitator will simply say, you know, I appreciate your input. I appreciate your interpretation. I appreciate your opinion. So all of a sudden we have truth, 2 plus 2 is 4, and cannot be any other number, as an opinion. So somebody else can say 2 plus 2 is 5 and cannot be any other number as an opinion. And therein, what Marx said, his 11th thesis in Feuerbach, he said, all the philosophers, those are just thinkers, those are people who are trying to solve problems, all the philosophers have interpreted the world in many different ways. In other words, we have all kinds of opinions. Then he says, the objective is to change. And so how do you get people in the room with all these opinions to compromise those opinions or their positions, which really is not an opinion, it's a position, it's set, for the sake of relationship? The key is the language of ought. Abraham Maslow, and I know this isn't really that far from understanding. We've all experienced this. We all use it within our life. That's why it's so successfully being implemented upon our nation. Your parent says you can't go out. You say why, to get them into dialogue for equality purposes, to get rid of that punishment-reward structure. And your parent says, because I said so. Now, you can't talk to them anymore because they have brought in the negative language of restraint, and they're going to hold to it because of the office that God gave them. So the next thing you do is you talk to yourself, and you say, well, I ought to be able to. Now, this was studied by the Marxists in Genesis 3, 1 through 6. Walter Benjamin, for instance, studied Scripture. And what they found was when Eve said, and she's paraphrasing what God's statement was, you know, we can eat of all the trees in the garden, but we can't eat the tree in the middle of the garden.
Hold that thought for 1 minute. We'll be right back here with Dean Gotcher. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dean Gotcher, and Dean has a message I think that every American needs to hear, and that is this idea of diapraxis, of the use of dialectic, of how do you get people to give up their fixed ideas that are usually based upon the way they've been brought up, what they believe about the world, what they believe about God. How do you get them to give up their ideas of the importance of private property? how do you give them give up their ideas about how a child should be raised? A lot of parents don't think that sex education is good for the child and that it's going to contaminate them. It's going to destroy their modesty. It's going to destroy their embarrassment. It's going to promote, you know, early sexual experimentation. But how do you move that parent away from their outmoded beliefs towards the new modern beliefs? And, of course, you do that with a facilitator, as you do with every aspect of society. And Dean was simply pointing out how this really worked in the Garden of Eden when, of course, God had given one set of instructions, and the facilitator, the serpent, gave another set of concepts which were in direct challenge and began to get you to question what God has said. So pick the story up, Dean.
And as Eve then said, you know, and she's paraphrasing, that's important. We need to quote the Word of God and make sure it's a translation as a Christian, because the church today has been caught into opinions. And we can all get along on opinions, but our opinion doesn't count on the Day of Judgment. It is God's Word. It's His standard. He's our Father, our Heavenly Father. In fact, we're not to call anyone Father on earth. That's how important this patriarchal didactic structure is. Jesus said, I can do nothing of my own self. What my Father tells me, that's what I do. He who does my Father's will in heaven is my brother, my sister, my mother. So you find all through the Scriptures this contrast is and not. I am God and you are not. Structure, and we are called to obey as children. Now, the language of rebellion is the language of Adabi, and Eve is sharing that in the garden when she says, we can't, for God has said, thou shalt not eat of it, nor touch it. And that is a key element to every one of us, because when we're told we can't do what we feel like doing, our natural inclination, Paul said, you know, with my mind, I love the law of God, but there's this law of the flesh. There's a war going on in me. And so there's this natural part of us that want to bond to the creation. It's called eros. It's that carnal nature. And the social engineers thinking, focusing on globalism or, you know, Mother Earth or Gaia, their whole agenda is to do a shift in our focus. And the key to this shift is this language of ought. Now, when Eve says, nor touch it, she's saying, I ought to at least be able to touch it. And then she says the negative word, cannot touch it, lest ye die. Now, Satan then counters God's thesis, didactic, patriarchal statement of you will die with the opposite. And this is known in the dialectic as antithesis or antithesis. And he says, no, you won't die. But that just leaves us in the world that we live in. There's right and wrong and black and white. And so now it's up to Eve to resolve this difference. And the key is the role of the facilitator to get us to share our ought-to-be's. Anytime this is true, by the way, for your elected officials in subcommittees, it's the same thing for your child in the classroom, the same thing for your spouse in the workplace, same thing for ministers in ministers' conferences. If I can get you to share your ought-to-be's, that means you're dialoguing with yourself internally, your resentment towards a restraint from a higher authority. If I can get you to vocalize that, to express that in an environment of approval, even though you might bring up the restraining language of the higher authority, if I challenge the higher authority's language, you will not defend higher authority. You as a politician, if you go to represent your elected official's restraining language on government, and I get him to share his ought to be, even though he might bring in the language of the constituents, when I say, oh, that doesn't matter, you know, they don't know. They don't know any better. He's not going to, from there on, defend the constituents. He is going to be free to follow his ought-to-be. This is the key to brainwashing. Brainwashing is washing from your brain, restraining language of your natural inclinations. And it's a socializing effect on every one of us.
And, of course, these techniques are very well worked out They're very well refined. There are books written about how you can manipulate the people. And as I said earlier, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed. Our ideas are suggested largely by men we have never heard of. That was what Edward Bernays wrote back in 1928. All right, Dean, why don't you go right ahead then?
So I'm working through the dialectic. There are three stages. There's the thesis. We've talked about that. That's the position, patriarchal is and thou shalt not language, the restraining language of our natural inclinations. Then there's the transitional language. That's the relationship language. We like ourselves. The Bible says, cursed is a man who trusts in man, and the first man we trust in is ourselves. And we have, then what Eve, by the way, did was, once she trusted in herself, because Satan said, you won't die, she didn't defend God from there on, because she had shared her feelings, how she felt about the situation, and now she was in an environment where she's not to share how she feels. See, God doesn't ask us how we feel or what we think. He tells us what we are to know. My people, as Hosea said, my people are not destroyed, see, because they feel and think. My people destroyed for lack of knowing. And God tells us. We just don't want to hear the truth. We literally are a culture today that doesn't want to hear the truth, because somebody has allowed us in classes and in work and in government and in church to share our ought-to-be's. And once those ought-to-be's are shared, ought-to-be, should-be, might-be, could-be, which are okay with rocks and plants and animals, but when they deal with our morals and ethics and our accountability before God, they have a direct effect upon our identity, our personal identity. And they're going to change us. They're going to turn us away from the respect for authority, godly authority. Where then, once the ought comes out, this is, by the way, I mentioned earlier, brainwashing. I take a soldier, I isolate him for a while, I punish him, I get him to think about himself. I bring him before me and I ask him, do you love America? And if he doesn't, if he just stays with name, rank, and serial number, which is simply he's wanting me to let his country know where he's at so his country can come and deliver him and beat up on me. But if I ask him if he loves America and he responds, he began dialogue with a facilitator. And what I do then is, once he's begun this dialogue, I'll put him with three or four other soldiers that have the same, well, America ought to be this. Because, once that dialogue starts, I'm going to find him saying, well, America ought to be different here. I find his resentment towards a sovereign. Then when he dialogues his ought to be with these other soldiers, he is personally attacking the restraining language of government. It doesn't have to be a particular issue. It's a way of thinking. And so day after day after day, this is lifelong learning.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dean Gotzer. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dean is just giving an example of how the technique might be utilized if we had an American soldier who was a prisoner, and the facilitator invites him in and talks to him. Of course, the soldier is a little worried. He thinks he may be tortured or something. But, of course, the facilitator says, do you love America? And the soldier says, of course I love America. And then of course, they put the soldier in with several other soldiers who are very patriotic. But as they begin to talk, about maybe some of the things that are wrong with America. Maybe they think that some people have too much power, or that we really don't have representative government, or that America is changing in a way we don't like it to. And gradually then the facilitator can begin to undermine how people really feel and undermine the patriotism. Would that be a fair statement, Dean?
It's important to understand the language of ought, though, because Abraham Maslow, he's noted for his hierarchy of needs, he said we have to create an environment of oughtiness. So this language is key. It's found in the garden. This language of, because anytime you hear an ought, a thou shalt not is under attack. You can't have that ought without a not being under attack. And you, and it's sort of a, it's like algebra. You can't have an ought without a not that's restrained you from your natural inclination, your love for the creation, your desire to bond with Mother Earth or Gaia or whatever you want to say about it. So the role of the facilitator is to allow you to share this ought. You know, in a traditional home, you wouldn't say, well, I ought to be able to go out because you'd be grounded for a month. You learn that's rebellious language and that's not going to survive. So the once the ought comes out of the soldier, then when I put them in the other group of soldiers that have the same ought, then they're now going to justify their feelings because our oddities are always good in our own eyes. This is very difficult for us to see. This is why when you go to a facilitated meeting, you sense something's wrong, but you can't quite put your finger on it. It's because without godly restraint, we're going to follow our oddities. And that is the key to the success of this process, changing our politicians, changing our teachers, changing our spouses in the workplace, changing ministers. A lot of ministers are grounded in the Word of God, go off to these conferences, they come back and they're changed, and you go, what happened to them? It's because they now have been delivered from that restraining language, the law of God. And I'm not promoting legalism here, I'm simply saying that when Jesus told a woman that was caught in adultery, he said, neither do I condemn thee. He then said, go and sin no more. The law is still in effect in that we are to love the Lord with all our heart and soul and strength, love God, and love our neighbor as ourselves. But loving your neighbor as yourself incorporates, as Paul correctly states it, the law of God, the second portion of the law of God. It's just fulfilled in Christ. But we don't negate the law. Jesus came to fulfill it. And it's once you get people in a church or the children in a classroom, I can do this in the classroom, for instance, all I have to do is have the children write a journal. And in that journal, I'm going to get the restraining language they experienced at home and their resentment towards it. It's going to be expressed in their oddity. Well, I ought to be able to do this. Well, why can't you do it? Well, it's my parents said I couldn't do it. Now, I'll put you with three or four other students, and they're going to learn to love one another because the world loves our odds. Because they're good. That's the goodness in each of us. And so your child is now going to become socialized. This is the key to socialism. And when your child comes home and you tell them they can't do something, now they're going to resent you. They chafe under your authoritarian now, whereas before they wouldn't, they might not have liked it, but they would obey you. Now they're going to challenge your authority. You say, take the garbage out, and they're going to say, well, give me three good reasons. In other words, let's talk about it. And now they're in higher order thinking skills. Now they're into Socratic critical thinking. And if you don't participate, and I tell people, well, if your child said that, I hope that you did give them three answers and they could feel them. But see, today, you do that in the marketplace, you're going to have the Department of Public Health and Safety knocking on your door. You're going to have a socialist institution who says now it takes the village to raise your child. And the only way that could happen is because somebody talked you and your community out of the restraining language that God gave every one of us. This is my child and not your child. But see, the animosity towards the patriarchal mindset today is just all across this nation, in every facet of business, workplace, in government, again, in education, from daycare center to nursing home. Now, the agenda is to get you over to the synthesis. Now, we had thesis, you in your position, antithesis, your position interferes with a relationship with somebody else. We ought to get along. Why aren't we getting along? Because you keep coming in telling somebody else they're wrong. And then the synthesis is how to negate the negation. How can we talk you out of your thou shalt not? The key is create a healthy environment. This is therapy now. They call it therapy for normals, where you can feel free to share your oddities, just like Satan got Eve to share her oddity in the garden. And then even if you bring your thou shalt not in, he'll say, well, here we're safe. We can do whatever we want to do. We can discover for ourselves. You have potential. You have purpose. And so we'll just, through this discourse, discover who we are collectively, and you'll be a part of this wonderful, loving experience. That, by the way, is the heart and soul of consensus, which means with sensation. You cannot come to consensus with a diverse group unless everyone was willing to literally take a knife out and stab their conscience, which is negative, which says cannot and must not and thou shalt not, for the sake of group approval. And the key is, once everybody in the room shares their oddities, they're going to have the group hug. That's the love fest, as they call it out there in the workplace. So I get your child to share their oddities. I'll put them with three or four other students with the same oddities. They will dialogue to their consensus, their group hug, and I have delivered your child from your authority, patriarch, right and wrong and black and white way of thinking. This was my teacher training. This is every teacher that's certified in America today has to take classes under the training of Bloom's Taxonomy. The second book called The Effective Domain on page 166, he says, our Weltanschauung, that's the German word for worldview or paradigm, and he gives us two names, and they're Marxists, Theodor Adorno and Eric Fromm. And Adorno states in his book, The Authoritarian Personality, because these were Marxists who came to U.S., and from Germany, when Hitler became chancellor, they went directly into their universities. And there's lots of histories about this. You know, Martin Jay has written his book, The Dialectic Imagination. You can read it a dozen times, and there's just volumes of information in it explaining what's happened to our nation. Well, Adorno, in his book, that Bloom, by the way, built his taxonomy off of for all teachers to praxis or to practice, he says we have to use social environmental forces to change the parents' behavior towards their children. Now, this brings me to what Marx said in his fourth thesis on Feuerbach. He says, once the earthly family, see, the family that disciplines their children and say, I'm the parent and you are not, you do what I tell you to do, and they say why, and you say because I said so, once you realize that's God's language, he says, then the traditional family must be destroyed. It must be annihilated. And how do you do it? You do it in theory and in practice. Theory is the way you think. So now I have to get your child in an environment where he changes the way he thinks individually. He's not thinking to obey the parent anymore. He's thinking for group approval. What does the group think? So that's the theory. And the practice part is, if everybody practices this, then your perception... You notice when everybody's doing something, it just makes it easier for you to do it. And so if you can leave the perception in the minds of everybody, this is the only way that everybody's doing it, and that's what consensus means. It's not majority vote. They know that if you had 9 people voting on an issue, 8 voted for and 1 against, that is least perceptually controlling than 3 people with a consensus. And so the role of the facilitator is to get everybody to share their oddities, come to a consensus, and it is literally in the perception of the citizens overwhelming.
And what you're basically saying is that the American people are being systematically brainwashed,
yes,
by a planned program based upon the dialectics, and the average individual doesn't even understand why their perception is changing.
We sense something's going on. That's discernment. But we don't know what it is because nobody's coming in and saying, oh, by the way, this is what they're doing to you. Satan didn't come to Eve and say, oh, by the way, this is what I'm going to do to you today. No, he did it to her. And by the way, Adam just abdicated. You know, he didn't even think it through. In fact, God confronted him, and the whole issue was dialogue again. He said, why did you hearken to the voice of your wife? Jürgen Habermas, who is probably more instrumental in helping to shape the world court system, states that he was a Marxist, came here, was taught at Frankfurt, passed away a few years ago. He stated that if you have a categorical imperative, that's, for instance, the Ten Commandments. That's the Word of God. You know, thus saith the Lord. A categorical imperative is a command that is unquestionable and universal. If you come into the room with that paradigm, that way of thinking, and I get you into dialogue or discourse, this is his words, you have lost your religious foundation. It's that simple. And so all I have to do is get your child into dialogue and discourse in regards to your restraining language and make that environment user-friendly for your child. Your child will come home and be a crisis child. They will challenge your authority. Your home will be stressed out. You're going to call for some experts to come in to help you. And more than likely, even if the church, even if it's the church, because the church today, across this nation with a purpose-driven life, purpose-driven church, you know, the church growth movement, is this whole process. And so the leadership can come in and they'll simply say to the parents, well, let's dialogue. Let's find common ground. Let's put aside the restraining language. Let's see if we can love one another. But see, God is a God of love. But if we find what's common to all the gods of the world, they're the gods of love. But see, God is holy and he's pure and righteous. And that is the negative that we all face. See, get up every morning with this law of the flesh. And without godly restraint, see, that negative, we will follow our natural inclinations.
But of course, the other side is not going to change their position. Their whole idea is to get you to change your position.
Yes. All authority is of God. God gave you authority, and the authority is and not. Satan comes along, or as a facilitator, every facilitator is playing the role of Lucifer. All he wants to do is talk you out of that negative language. You lose your property, your children, your sovereignty, your nation. You lose everything by removing the restraining language of human nature. And it's important that we understand that this is all about communication. The Tower of Babel was all about communication. And that process is back. That group think, group hug process just permeates across this nation. When people come to meetings and they're in the process, they go, well, how do you feel and what do you think? And I go, well, you know, it doesn't matter how I feel or what I think. It's what I know. The truth sets me free, not my opinion, not your opinion, but the truth. And God has given us truth. Bloom says there is no truth. Marx says there is no truth. Truth is just a moment. That moment that we all come to this consensus feeling of oneness, therein lies truth.
But don't you think, Dean, that this is really all a manifestation of a conspiracy against God? Destroy the people's belief in God, and then you can control them?
Well, every social psychology book that I read that finally get down to the heart, they all get to the garden. There's a problem in the garden. It's not Adam, and it's not Eve, and it's not Lucifer. It is God. He just doesn't know how to get along. No, seriously.
These people really hate God. This is what people don't understand. This is the common denominator behind everything. There really is a God that makes right and wrong. Or, well, maybe there's a God that makes right and wrong, but maybe the Bible isn't entirely correct, or maybe it's been rewritten, or maybe sometimes God is just too strict and we have to be, well, if we follow these absolutes, we're going to get into all sorts of trouble. Maybe we should begin just compromising a little. Isn't that sort of how it works? Isn't that
give a little. Let's just, you know, let's agree to disagree. You know, at the end of the meeting, if I can't quite get you over to my position, I'll just say, well, let's agree to disagree. If you do that, if I said 2 plus 2 is 5 and cannot be any other number, you know, and then I got you to agree to disagree with me, that's a contract. That's a covenant. You can't go out and tell other people, that guy's nuts. You know, he's out there hugging trees and feeling their pain. You know, he's a guy of illusion. You can't do that. This is powerful stuff. There's a book entitled Human Relations in Curriculum Change. I call it a cookbook on humans. It was published in 1950. It explains in glorious detail every facet of this process that is now being applied in every institution across this nation, all for the purpose to re-educate or rethink or do this paradigm shift on the citizens of America for the sake of world peace.
Yeah, because that's where we're headed, towards the New World Order and the New World Religion. Dean, I want you to tell our listeners how they can come to your meeting, which is going to be held there in Spokane on Friday, and will you have any more meetings in that area?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to have one on Thursday, possibility there at the church, but we haven't got any confirmation on that. But certainly Friday at 7 p.m. at Calvary Chapel. The address is 511 West Hastings Road. And then we've got one up in Addy Saturday, but I don't have the address here. Check our website, authorityresearch.com.
Authorityresearch.com. That's authorityresearch.com. Now, are you going to have the rest of your crew there? Are you going to be doing those by yourself?
No, most of these meetings are myself, as my wife and I travel from coast to coast. We're home probably 3 months out of the year and trying to inform America what's going on, and particularly Christians, because they're being beat up in the apostate church, and they don't understand why. They know something's wrong, and so I'm just encouraging them to hold to the Word of God, put on the whole armor of God, and stand, and having done all, stand. Be faithful to His Word. He is faithful to us, and it's through His Word and through His love, and we need to not abandon that, not let human relationship guide us. You know, again, cursed is the man who trusts in man. We need to set our minds on things above and not on things on this earth. And this is very manipulative stuff. They'll take scriptures that you and I would quote in defense of our position, and, you know, up front they'll sort of bait and switch. They'll give you what you want to hear, and then they'll turn the subject, and they'll change the focus. And so it's very important we weigh everything that is said, take everything captive to the knowledge of Christ.
And, of course, really, there's an effort, a conscious, organized effort to change our worldview. And it is all part of a carefully coordinated, orchestrated effort to destroy our Christian faith. There is a conspiracy against God, and the people on the other side know exactly what they're doing. Those of you who listen to our programs, of course, understand the spiritual implications of everything that's going on today. And just look back 5 years. How many people were willing to go to war in Iraq and Iran 5 years ago? How many people felt that we really had to go to war with the Muslim world and kill a lot of those Muslims because they were threatening us? But, of course, how everything has changed in the intervening years. Understand we're being manipulated. Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. Well, Dean, you got 3 minutes to wrap up this program. By gosh, the time just flies by.
Well, it's just this taxonomy that I refer to, Bloom's taxonomy, cognitive and affective. In the second book, page 91, he says, we're opening up Pandora's box. It's simply a taxonomy. Your child is being mapped in the classroom. Is he traditional thinking? Is he transitional, full of oddities? Or is he transformational, where he now knows the process and can work on others? And if he's traditional, then, see, that's mapping. I have to know to neutralize him. I have to marginalize him. I have to isolate him. Make sure he's with the right constellation of students, because if two or three of these traditional right and wrong thinking students are together on a group grade, they're going to produce that process. And so I have to isolate him with mostly transitional students in a group grade and maybe one facilitating learning, you know, got a leadership training, transformational student. And so that's the role. I could get into James Coleman's work, a busing decision made on this very same process, consolidating schools to the small school is a not, the larger schools are oughts, and so you could change society through education. So these things haven't happened by accident. This is very biblical. God said, you know, the moment we turn away from Him and don't trust in Him. I always start meetings with that scripture, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, then He's the one who directs your path. And it's important that we practice that instead of practicing our carnal desires, even though we might throw all kinds of scriptures on top of it and say it's just loving one another and doing that group hug thing.
Well, I think that it's so vitally important that people understand that what has transpired in our society, the society that we lived in 50 years ago, is not the society we live in today, but it did not happen by accident.
Right.
People of great wealth working for the Rockefeller, Carnegie, Ford, and other foundations who have a different worldview.
And Jesus came to deliver us from all of this.
Right.
He never practiced it once, and we need to walk in Him and serve Him.
Yeah, of course. But how are we going to take it back? How are we going to convince the people, Dean?
Well, we humble ourselves before Him. Again, we become His children. We obey Him, and we trust in Him. And when He sends you up to office, you go and you stand, and even if you stand alone, you keep standing and proclaiming the truth.
And
you
that's go, what you're really doing. Dean is going out all across America, he and his wife, and sometimes they have friends with him, good friends of ours as well. And sometimes they're just alone, and sometimes the audiences are not large. But I will tell you that the people who go to Dean Wilcher's programs, their lives are never quite the same again, because now, for the first time, they really understand the dialectic process, diapract. Well, Dean, thank you very much for being with us. And do you have just a parting thought before we let you go?
Well, again, trust in the Lord. We've got to do it. We've got to. This nation will not be changed without our heart being changed.
All right, fine. I hope that our listeners will go to the go to your website and learn more about what you're doing. One more time, the web page.
AuthorityResearch.com.
God bless you, Dean. Give my best to your wife.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thanks so much. And I recommend without hesitation the program that is going to be put on there in Spokane. Listen to Dean. Dean, understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought in an educational battlefield, on a political battlefield, and an ideological and cultural battlefield. And, of course, the wealth of the world is on the other side, because the wealth of the world is controlled by Lucifer and his disciples. And there really is a spiritual battle, and most people don't even know what's going on. Well, let me, of course, remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and if you can help us, why, we would certainly appreciate that. Then we want to remind you we're having a meeting. Our annual Radio Liberty seminar is going to be on the 29th of October. And we're going to, of course, have Constance Cumby, who's written extensively on the New Age, and a man named Avie Salada, who's really the most powerful man in the world, and most people have never heard of him. We'll have Chris Pinto, who wrote and produced the film The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, about the secret societies. There were, formed during the Elizabethan period and came to America in the 1600s, those secret societies whose influence is still directing the course of our nation today, which is why we are going to war in Iran, or at least they want to take us to war in Iran, which will result in millions of deaths. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders? Why, it's deafening in its silence. Where is the outcry against torture and... Well, of course, remember, it's what the definition of torture really is. And if we don't torture them, why they're going to kill us. So we have to torture them. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Or is it? Or are we really manifesting what Christianity is about in our current foreign and domestic policies? Well, we do hope that many of you want to come down to our meeting from wherever you are. And you have to, of course, let us know, because we're serving lunch. It's all day long. It's going to be a great program. It always is. And at the end of the day, why, very few people want to leave. We hope that you'll be here and enjoy this with us. That's the 29th of October. And give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. In these uncertain times, we certainly remind our listeners they really have to look after their health. If you'd like a copy of our health catalog, if you'd like to stock up on the things that you need to have large supplies of, because, of course, if what I suspect is going to happen does actually take place, you're not going to have the ability to get many of the things you need in the way of the vitamins and minerals and other things you need to have on hand, and the antibiotics, the natural antibiotics that nature has used for years. If you'd like a health catalog, give us a call. If you'd like to know more about food storage, give us a call. We actually certainly want to have food for ourselves and our neighbors and our friends, and I hope you'll want to do that as well. Our telephone number, either for the health catalog, the food catalog, or simply the general catalog, 1-800-544-8927. You certainly need a water purifier, and especially if you have fluoride in your water, because they're poisoning you and destroying your ability to think, and specifically the minds of our children in the areas where they have fluoridated water. You see a lot of children with an IQ of 70 or 80 and no geniuses. You knock off the intelligence. They know what they're doing. And if you doubt that, you go to the website of the employees of the EPA, the scientists who work there. Their union website is NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org. Read what they say and realize that they're poisoning our children because they want to destroy their minds and their ability to think. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Listen to our internet programs, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this next hour we're going to have Mr. Is it Gene Moody or Dean Moody?
Gene
Moody with us. And, of course, you know, we've talked many times about the fact that they're really are occult organizations in America, where they have occult and demonic programs. And those of you who have seen the DVD that's put out by Alex Jones, if you haven't seen it, we carry it. It's on the Bohemian Grove, and you'll actually see the feigned human sacrifices there as the leaders of our country, and I'm talking about presidents and secretaries of state and many of the richest men in America who control our media and our corporations. You know, they're putting on their dark gowns, their hoods, their cattles, and strange pagan chants as they carry out a ceremony of worship to Moloch, the owl god, a 30 or 40-foot stone owl. If you haven't seen this DVD on the Bohemian Grove, let me recommend it. And then we of course, have a four-tape set on that. And then we talk about the Skull and Bones Secret Society. And we've done other programs on pedophilia and the pedophilia rings, the Franklin cover-up, at the highest levels of our government. And we're so concerned about somebody using child pornography, and that is terrible. But we never talk about how the FBI sends people all over the country to say there is no such thing as demonic possession or satanic organizations. All of this is just simply make-believe. And they even have a magazine, The Skeptical Inquirer, and its whole purpose is to debunk this idea that there is demonic possession. But our guest, Gene Moody, knows there is because he works with this all the time. Gene, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and about your ministry?
Yes, sir. Okay, my ministry, I'm an apostle, a teacher, a writer, a counselor, licensed ordained minister, spiritual father, spiritual grandfather, pastor of pastors, and apostle of churches. Now, those are my functions of what I do in the ministry. And in the ministry, it's a worldwide ministry through a couple of internet sites. And it's delivered. I'm known around the world in the area of deliverance. You would call me a deliverance minister. And so I move in the realm of deliverance and healing. Healing goes right along with deliverance.
All right, fine. Now, do you feel then that at least some of the diseases are demonically created?
No doubt about it.
All right, fine. What about some of the mental diseases? I mean, a lot of people we think of as being paranoid or schizophrenic. Do you find that some of these people, if they can be, they can actually be spiritually healed?
Yes, they can. Like schizophrenia is, there's a demonic pattern to schizophrenia, and there's a way. It's not a fast process, but there's a way of working with people in schizophrenia and taking them through deliverance so they can be healed and live a normal life.
How long have you been at this, Gene?
I have been at this ministry for 30 years.
Now, you told me that you're about on the road about half the time. Do you spend most of your time in the South, or what part of the country do you cover?
Well, it's pretty much, I guess probably, I would do more regionally, which would be in the South and Southeast and so forth. I just got back from Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is now I've been to Castor, Wyoming, which is about as further west as I have gone. Well, I've actually been to Alaska, to Anchorage, Alaska.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment. Well, I guess it's Gene Moody, and he's talking about his deliverance ministry. And, Gene, how did you get involved in something like this? Because, I mean, you are coming up against this tremendously powerful demonic forces. I have no question at all. They're real. But how did you ever get involved in this? How did you learn how to approach this and how to help people?
What happened is we lost our only son. He died And so this threw our family in a tailspin. And Early and I were headed for a divorce. Our daughter was headed for rebellion. And so we fasted and prayed, and we sought the Lord for about 2 years. And God supernaturally taught us deliverance in the middle of the night, in the middle of rebellion, about 30 years ago. And he taught us basic deliverance, how people get rejected, become bitter, and rebel. And so he saved our marriage, and he saved our daughter. And so that began our ministry. God began to send people to us for help. And so we began the deliverance ministry about 30 years ago.
I have a friend of mine who had a deliverance ministry. She's sort of backed away from it recently. She told me she's actually seen people actually levitate. In other words, you know, we hear about levitation.
Yes.
It sounds pretty crazy, but she I don't doubt a word she's told me. Have you ever seen people levitate?
No, I've never seen people levitate, but I've heard about it. And generally, these would be people who are pretty strong into the occult.
And, of course, there really are people involved in the occult. Do people who are in the occult ever come to you, or most of the people that you deal with are people who, you know, who certainly don't want to be afflicted by this demonic possession?
Well, I deal across the full range of Christianity. I minister to apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, and other deliverance ministers, and to the ordinary lay Christians. And so I see a wide variety of people that I minister to over the telephone or in my home.
Is it ordinary actually churches that invite you to come and talk to them? Are there groups? I mean, how do you get an invitation? Who's inviting you?
Well, I asked the Lord to be my schedule maker, and so and that works out real well, because if he sets up a meeting for me, then I know I'll be successful. And so it's predominantly, I don't get invited to the, you know, the mega churches. It's predominantly small churches, independent churches, interdenominational, non-denominational churches. Occasionally I go out and minister in a hotel, motel, a jail, a prison, or something like that, occasionally at home.
Hold that. We'll be right back in just a moment with Gene Moody. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Gene Moody, and he has a Deliverance Moody and ministry. What's it called? So people could go up on your website and see look at the information you have posted there.
I have two websites. One website is bedelivered.com, bedelivered.com. And the other one is actually not my website. I'm on the website, but it's not mine. It's demonbuster.com, demonbuster.com.
Well, Chris, a lot of people don't really believe in this sort of thing. They don't believe in demonic possession. What do you say to the skeptics?
Well, the problem is they haven't had any experiential knowledge. They've never gotten involved in it. And so they'll take the Bible and try to prove that, you know, their position is correct. And that, you'll find that in Christianity. And it's really unfortunate that there's a good number of Christians who do not believe that a Christian have a demon. And what they revolve it around is they say a Christian cannot be demon-possessed. Well, that's true. A Christian is not demon-possessed. But Christians can be very demonized.
Well, you know, this seems almost like a play on words. I've heard this same argument before. And it doesn't matter whether you're possessed or whether you're obsessed or whether you're, you know, whether the demon controls you, why you got a real problem with that demon. So I think we spend so much time worrying about the use of words rather than the fact that we do live in a fallen world. There is another dimension. There are demonic forces in this world. And sometimes unsuspecting people will of course be taken over. Now, do you think that people who get taken over by demons are those who perhaps have some questions of their faith, or perhaps they have an occult history in their background that they've never renounced? Perhaps they're some parent or grandparent was a witch or a warlock, or was a medium, something of that sort. Why would the demons pick on certain people, or do the people have to open themselves to the demons?
Well, all of the above. witchcraft, as you know, is becoming more and more common in the United States and around the world. And then you get the sins of the ancestors, where your ancestors have been involved in witchcraft. And this comes down, the curse comes down the family line to the third or fourth generation. You have people who get involved in witchcraft because they're looking for power and money and fame and sex. And so they get involved looking for the power of witchcraft. And so they personally get involved and have the sins of the ancestors. And so it can come in through the individual, or it can come in through someone who has had spiritual authority over them, or even carnal authority. And it can also come in where there's cracks in their spiritual armor.
Well, have you ever run into this where a minister was demonically possessed?
Well, yes. I mean, as far as having... Okay, the easy way to put it is having demons.
All right, fine. Well, that's having demons, and let's use your terminology.
Right, and so, yes, I minister... the people I minister to, essentially are Christians. I deliberately don't minister to someone who's not a Christian because I can do them harm. They can be worse off than they were before. So, if I go into churches, for instance, I will... do two things. I'll do personal ministry, and then I'll minister from the pulpit. And from the pulpit, I'll do mass deliverance, and individually, I'll do personal ministry. And generally, I will minister to the leaders of the church as well as the followers of the congregation. And so, and what I found, and I've worked with, so no telling how many thousands of people I've worked with, and I find that Christians, there's many ways a Christian can have a demon. And one of them that you mentioned is like occultism, it could be occultism, witchcraft, Satan worship, anyway, basically call it the dark side. It could be anything that came from the dark side. And then take sex. Sex is a very common, people get very demonized. You get, where people get involved in fornication, adultery, oral sex, anal sex, and lesbianism, homosexuality. They get demons through that, and as you go on down the list, I mean, there's many ways that a person can become demonized.
Because, you know, this is, I think, one thing that most people don't understand, is the powerful spiritual, implications of homosexuality and lesbianism. And there is a spiritual component to this spiritual addiction, isn't there?
Right. They become, when you get into lesbianism and homosexuality, and the Bible calls it burning lust. They actually have burning lust for each other, causing them to have sex, male with male and female with female. And so this is a very strong demon. And it comes in, it generally comes in when someone has, they were young and someone sodomized them, either male or female, they were sodomized and you had males with males and females with females. And generally that kicks it off. It's not inherited.
But, of course, is this actually, does this happen among Christians as well? Because you said you're dealing primarily with Christians.
Right. Yes, every now and then I minister, like this one church I go to, they got two female lesbians, and they came into Christianity, and I have ministered to them. And through the years, I've ministered to homosexuals and lesbians. I can't say a lot, but occasionally I get involved with a homosexual or a lesbian.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we carry a book. It's called Hostage to the Devil. It's written by a friend of mine who's since deceased, Father Malachi Martin. And it's the story of five exorcisms that were documented by the Catholic Church. Do you do something like the Catholic exorcisms, where, of course, the priest goes into... To drive the demonic spirit out?
Well, exorcism is actually the wrong word. It's deliverance. Exorcism is the...
It's a Catholic word, really.
Right, it's a Catholic... Exorcism is a Catholic word. And I prefer to use the term deliverance. And what I do is... let's say that I have an hour with people. And I'll sit down, I'll ask them, what are your problems? What do you want to be ministered to about? And I'll take notes, then I'll take them through a prayer to take away the legal rights that the demons have to them. And then I will pray for them, I'll cast the demons out, and then I'll pray for them to be healed. And then I'll talk to them about possibly how to maintain their deliverance. And so first you have to identify the problems people have. And as they identify problems, many times they're telling me names of demons.
Oh, do you ever actually talk to the demons? In other words, do many times these demons manifest themselves to the people?
The way I do deliverance, the manifestations are generally not spectacular because I take away their legal rights and I take away their grounds. And so occasionally most of the manifestations I see are the demons looking through someone's eyes, taking over their voice,
By taking over their voice, I mean to the people. Do these demons sometimes speak through the voices of the individual you're working with?
Yes, they do. It's occasionally, I run into a strong demon, and the demon will not come out. I may force the demon to tell me, what is your name, what right do you have to be there, when did you come in, and then find out the information I need to take away the demon's legal right. So that happens occasionally, not very often. But at any time the spirits could manifest, or they could take over their body if they were strong enough.
Well, guys, one of the criteria for Catholic exorcism is many times the demons will be able to speak in a language that the person doesn't even know. Have you ever encountered anything like that, where the demons speak in a foreign language?
Well, yes, in the Christian realm, there's called baptism in the Holy Spirit and speaking in other tongues, and then in the demonic realm, there's false tongues. So you can run into true tongues and false tongues. Now, the demons would naturally speak in false tongues.
They would speak in false tongues, so they would not speak in a different language.
Now, I don't really know. I wouldn't know. I mean, I can't interpret what they say. When they are speaking in a language other than English,
okay.
I don't have the ability to interpret that.
Right.
I haven't run into that very often. Generally, when they speak to me, they speak in English, or when I cast demons out, they understand my language. I don't care what country they're in, they will understand my language.
And of course, these have supernatural intelligence in many ways, but I think this is one of the most important things for Christians to realize, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but really if giving yourself to the Lord, and you know the Holy Spirit is in you, you have power over the demons, and you can actually cast them out. I mean, I think can't anybody do that if they understand that they do have this power given to them in the blood of Jesus?
Yes, and I'd like to emphasize that. It's because Mark 16:17, signs will follow that believe in my name, they shall cast out demons. Now, theoretically, every believer, every Christian should be casting out demons, and you have the right to do that because you're a son or daughter of God, and you have the right to use the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, which is what gets rid of the demons. So I highly recommend every Christian get involved in deliverance.
Now, what about the schizophrenic? How do you communicate with the schizophrenic who doesn't think that there's anything wrong, who really believes in their paranoia, who believes in these paranoid delusions? How do you reach them?
Well, they say statistically 1 out of 8 people have schizophrenia, but in actuality, schizophrenia starts off, you get rejected, you become bitter, and you rebel. And so then, that starts it off.
All right, because sometimes, don't you think there's an element of fear or some other emotional response that precipitates the schizophrenic break?
Correct. You have, schizophrenia paranoia.
Right.
Okay, paranoia is fear, panic fear. It's like extreme fear. And so fear can be tied in with schizophrenia.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Gene Moody. And when we get back, if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're not a Christian, you think this is probably crazy talk. I don't think it's crazy at all. There really is a demonic realm. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about the demonic realm. There really are people, some people, who have the ability to contact the other dimension. This is what the witches are doing. This is what the fortune tellers and the mediums do. And of course, there's some people who are simply quacks that, it's all talk. But, there are other people who have this ability. to contact the other realm. Of course, this is what the Luciferians, this is what the Satanists want to do, because within this other realm, there is tremendous power available, and with that power will come wealth and sex and drugs and notoriety and fame, all these things that I suppose most people would really want to have. But, of course, it does at the cost of your eternal soul. So Gene is there, and, of course, he's learned, he's been doing this for 30 years, a deliverance ministry. Is this what you do full-time, Gene? Do you have another job, or is this your full-time occupation?
Right now, it's pretty much full-time. Give you a little bit of my background. I've been an engineer for 50 years. I spent 25 years on industrial plants, 5 years on airports, and been an expert witness for 25 years. So basically, I retired in 2005. I got to finish up my expert witness work. I got a few cases left. They go on for years. And otherwise, I'm basically in full-time ministry.
Well, I think that's wonderful that you can, because, of course, I think your ministry is very needed. We need people to understand this other dimension. You know, when we talk about it to a lot of people, their eyes sort of glass over. A lot of Christians really don't believe there's this other dimension out there because their ministers aren't telling them about it. Have you run into that?
Well, this is the big problem. They're not taught in the seminaries or the Bible schools. They're not taught out of the pulpit. And so basically the majority of Christians, unfortunately, are ignorant about what we're talking about. And the Bible says, brethren, I would not have you to be ignorant. And so what they're doing is they're ignorant of the devices of Satan. And so Satan is in the dark, and he's able to do whatever he can to the people with him not knowing what's going on.
And, of course, there's a lot of ministers who say, well, we ought to emphasize only Jesus. We ought to think about Jesus coming and wait for Jesus to come. And I think that's important. I believe he's coming, but I don't know when he's coming. He may come 30 years after America's been destroyed. And this idea, of course, not to understand what the world is all about and not to do the best we can while we're here, I think, of course, detracts Christians from being involved in this spiritual battle that is taking place. And this is the reason that America is going to hell, and I use that term, you know, just, you know, very, very figurative. We've lost America. Because we've lost our foundation, and we don't recognize the fact that there really is evil out there, and we're really up against that. And if you don't know who the enemy is, Lucifer is the enemy, and his minions are the enemy, and the people that they control, people of great power and influence, why, how are you possibly going to counter them? How are you going to explain to people what's really going on? Why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools in an effort to destroy the faith of our children? Why our motion pictures are as raunchy and degrading as they are? Why we have in our television things that are frankly pornographic, and people never, of course, object to it. In fact, it were worth that the good people of this country were actually watching all of these things, that they certainly wouldn't be able to continue what they're doing. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Gene Moody, and he's simply commenting that so many of our ministers don't understand what this spiritual battle is about. And I will tell you one reason, and that is because they infiltrated our seminaries many years ago, and they trained our ministers, so many of them, in a gospel that completely ignores the true spiritual nature of what's going on or prepares our Christians to deal with it. We've got Bart calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. I try to wait until I have something pertinent to say to call up. And
okay,
fine.
Do you have something pertinent to say then?
I do indeed. I really appreciate the subject. It's something I think about a lot. I think that many people expect demonic influence to be something very dramatic, like Linda Blair and The Exorcist and that sort of thing. But for most of my adult life, I've had alcoholism all around me, although I myself quit drinking many, many years ago. In retrospect, looking back on it, on the lives of the people I've known, many of whom have died as a result of alcohol, I can remember very clearly and vividly some of their actions and the speech and the things they had said and done. And in retrospect, now looking back on it with some maturity and understanding, especially as a Christian, I can, as I remember it, as I recall those sad times, I can almost see the demonic influence entering the person who might be saying or doing things that were so completely unlike that person when they're sober that it really, to me, although I couldn't prove it in court, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that alcohol is just like a wide open door or demonic influence. Let's get
Gene's thoughts on that.
Alcohol as a doorway for demonic influence.
How do you feel about that, Gene?
Well,
what about either alcohol or drugs as a doorway for demonic possession?
Right. What he's saying is correct, and it's a good way of presenting it. These are addictions. Okay, you could be addicted to alcoholism. You could have drug addiction. You can have addiction to pharmaceuticals and so forth. And so what it is, anytime you run into addictions, then you always look for the demonic aspect behind it. Anything a person is addicted to can be demonic, and alcoholism can be demonic.
I think there's probably a very good reason that people that came before us referred to alcohol as spirits.
Right.
Maybe that's a good thought.
They really did. And you know, Mr. Moody, I personally am convinced that we're now entering the beast system, so I really think that, unfortunately, America has become so degenerate. If any of these leading politicians were to stand in front of an audience and admit that they were demonically possessed and their demon goes everywhere with them and let's party, they'd probably just get a big giant round of applause, you know?
Well, we're in real trouble, Bart, but I think we're making progress, and I really do. I've been out this season over 44 years, and for the first time, I see some light at the end of the tunnel. I hope it's not the approaching freight train, but more and more people at least are waking up about what happened on 911. If we can get them to begin to address that issue, then I think we can begin to make them, or hopefully they'll begin to address the spiritual aspect of it, because, of course, the only real solution for our nation is to turn back to God.
Absolutely, and I think you're right, Dr. Stan, and God bless both of you. Good night, gentlemen.
Thanks very much. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling us from San Jose, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Ray, are you listening on shortwave or internet?
No, I'm
on
the radio.
Oh, this is Ray from Santa Cruz.
On the radio, yeah.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that I have assisted in a deliverance type of situation, you know, with my neighbor who happened to be a woman, that she did some strange things. You know, she took her furniture, all of her furniture outside. She was so scared and traumatized by this, what she even said that she felt that there was demons after her, you know. And so I participated in a
deliverance. Yeah,
what a deliverance. And I'm a Catholic, so I had some holy water with me.
Okay.
And it helped.
Well, I tell you what, though, you really need a bit of experience in this. You know, you need to have somebody who's done it before. Quite frankly, I would be very afraid to undertake it myself. Because if you haven't read this book we carry called Hostage to the Devil, it's the story of five exorcisms and what happened to one of the priests who really didn't have all of the faith he should have had. He was a professor at a major Catholic university. He was a paleontologist who had lost his faith. And what happened to him when he came into contact with ultimate evil?
Yeah.
It's an amazing story, Hostage to the Devil.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the book.
All right,
I wanted to say one other thing. I was with a group of Protestant, they were like what do they call them? They're sort of a therapy group or some kind of rescue group, you know, that come to people that are in trouble.
Hold that thought just a moment here.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Ray calling us from the Santa Cruz. And incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, Ray, you were saying you were with a group of Protestants, but go ahead.
With a Protestant and me a Catholic, and we did a number of prayers.
We all love the same Lord.
Yeah, we did a number of prayers, and it worked. She was no longer fearful. And so we took her furniture back in the her house and arranged everything just right, and she was at peace, you know, after the prayer session, you know.
Yeah, well, of course, you really do have, you know, as a believer, you have the ability to command the demons to leave. Isn't that right, Gene?
Right. Every believer has that ability, and in the Catholic Church, they have official positions of exorcist, and I know Bob Larson recently got involved with the main man in the Catholic Church. And so, yes, they do have, the Catholic Church does believe in casting out demons. I don't think they do it very often nowadays.
No, they maybe ought to do it a lot more, but then so the Protestants ought to be doing it too. I think there's so much demonic possession today that we're trying to treat with various psychotropic drugs or you know, electric shock or call it what you will. And these people are, frankly, demonically possessed.
I want to say one thing, one additional thing. I'm starting to believe that the television is really the arm of the devil. It's really very obvious.
It really should be. In fact, we have this wonderful DVD. It's called Da Vinci Con, Hollywood's Attack on America. And, of course, they use the same techniques in Hollywood for our motion pictures that they do on television. But you're absolutely right. I think this whole thing is demonic. I think that there are demonic elements to the Internet as well. But, of course, we have to live in this world. We just have to be very careful what we funnel into our mind. And we have to know where we stand with God and who we are answerable to.
Well,
anything else, Ray?
I think you said it just right, but I think increasingly, though, the TV is starting to get very, very bad, morally degraded.
You're absolutely right. Now, how would you respond to that, Gene?
Well, okay, that's a good question.
Hold that thought for just a minute, Gene. We're going to have to bring our other stations on board. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Gene Moody, has a deliverance ministry. And then we have Ray calling from Santa Cruz, who is just saying that he really believes that television has a tremendous demonic effect, demonic influence on us. And Gene was just about to comment on that. Would you like to go ahead, Gene?
Yes. Okay, demons can come through the television set. A good example is pornography. Television is really a conduit of pornography. And so, as you said, and watch this, and the demons will have a place with you, and then you can get spirits come into you through pornography, through the television set, as well as magazines or whatever. So, it's definitely something. Okay, you sit there and you have to, as a Christian, you sit there and you have to resist all these temptations. And if you don't resist them, and if you give in to them, and if you agree with them, then you're opening yourself up to demonic attack.
And I think that's really so true. The thing is that the battle is in our minds. And you wonder why some people, otherwise rational people will commit terrible acts of murder or other things. And I remember there was this one mass murder. And James Dobson went and talked to him, you know, before he was executed, and he admitted that he used to watch pornography all the time. And, you know, he didn't like doing what he would do, but then, of course, he'd get this obsession, and he'd give in to it, and I don't know, he must have killed 20 or 30 women, something of the sort. But it all started with pornography. And once you let that into your mind and heart, why, of course, you become demonically possessed. This Andrea Yates, this woman who drowned her five children. listen to what she said. She said that Satan told me to do it, and everybody scoffed at it. And so many of the people who do commit these things, maybe they do have some, metabolic upset and postpartum psychosis, but they can open you to demonic possession, and then you will do these terrible and unthinkable things. We live in a fallen world, and of course Satan is increasingly having his way. Anything you want to say, Ray, before we let you go?
Well, I think it's great to have these kind of programs on, because there's a lot of people that, I think people need salvation,
Amen to that.
Yeah. So okay. That's about all I had to say.
Okay, well, God bless and thanks so much, Ray.
Thanks.
All right, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I guess it's Gene Moody, and of course he has a deliverance ministry. And I want you to get your websites out again and how people can get in touch with you if they'd like to talk to you over the telephone or perhaps invite you to their church.
Okay, my telephone number at my office is 225-755-8870, and you can contact me there. Then, about either personal ministry or coming to your church and ministering or to your group or whatever. Then, my websites are demonbuster.com and bedelivered.com.
All right, one more time, because people don't get it the first time. Devilbuster.com or bedelivered.com?
Correct.
All right, fine. And so if you're interested, of course, this is a very real problem, and I wonder how many people in our mental institutions, are actually demonically possessed. When I first heard this, I thought that was just such crazy talk. And, of course, the older I get, the more I'm convinced that it's not crazy talk at all, that many of these people really are demonically possessed. If you read the story of, the demoniac at the Gerizim, that's on the far side of the Sea of Galilee, and how Jesus went there and cast the demons out from him. And there are so many examples of people who are demonically possessed that we read about in the Scriptures. We read about it in the Scriptures, but we don't imagine that it could be taking place in our lives today. And there were, at that time, there were mediums and fortune tellers. And remember, one of them, of course, got mixed up with Paul, or I think it was Paul, and or maybe it was Peter. But anyway, she lost her ability, this supernatural ability she had as a fortune teller. And of course, the man who was running the business was just furious with him because now his meal ticket was gone. But there really are people who can come in contact with the other dimension. But the difficulty is they open themselves up to demonic possession. Would that be a fair statement?
Correct. When you move in the realm of the occult, witchcraft, Satan worship, and you open yourself up to demonic possession, the chances are very good that you will lose your soul. You will not be able to become a Christian. You can become very demonized because you invite the demons to come within you. And so, yes, and you get further and further away from Christ.
Yeah, of course, this is really it's a terribly, terribly dangerous thing. And nobody should ever open themselves up to this sort of thing. A lot of kids get involved in this. Oh, they want, of course, to play some of these games where they can levitate a table, and these children gather around a table, and they each put a finger under one side, great big heavy table. And, of course, they can actually levitate this table. No way they could lift the table that way, but they will actually levitate it. They play Bloody Mary or all of these wonderful games. The Ouija board. If you run into the Ouija board and its ability to take people into the dark side, Gene?
Correct. Yeah, that's a very common game. And it's you're seeking forbidden knowledge, which is an abomination to God. You're supposed to seek hidden knowledge from God, not from the occult. And so there's a demonic power behind that that causes the Ouija board to operate. And like there's a demonic power that does levitation. The people don't They call upon, basically they're calling upon a demonic parent to, like, levitate the table.
And of course, this is what the thing is, and you can do it, but you do it, of course, at the endangering of your eternal soul. And I really believe, of course, that many of the great buildings of antiquity, and some of these marvelous things, we can't figure out how they were able to build the pyramids and so many of the things in bygone ages. It would be difficult to do this today. I believe that they were relying on supernatural power. And, of course, this was one of the secrets of the ancient, of the mystery religions. Those mystery religions which are being projected into modern-day society through secret societies like Masonry. In fact, if you read Albert Pike, you'll find that modern-day Masonry is the end of the modern-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religions. And, of course, the power that they had. And that is a secret which most Masons don't know, but is certainly there. Well, Gene, as you run into any opposition, as you begin going out and, of course, begin to confront these demonic forces, I mean, do you ever come under demonic attack?
Well, okay, that's a good question. Now, when we first started out about 30 years, the opposition was much more than it is today. Deliverance is growing around the world. And I do come under demonic attack, especially if I leave my spiritual armor open. I'll give you this an example. I went to Richmond, Virginia. The ministry picked me up at the airport, and so we were in the car heading out of the gates of the airport. And I made a dumb statement. I made a dumb statement about people getting attacked where I go, and immediately I got hit with a heart attack, and pain was going down my left arm. And so I realized that I had made a dumb statement. So immediately I repented. I repented, asked God to forgive me for the statements I had made. I broke the curses on me and came against the spirits, and a heart attack left immediately. And so that was a good example of me saying something that I should not have said and opening myself up to demonic attack. Now, I brought that on myself. Specifically, I don't have a problem.
You mentioned the healing ministry. Now, of course, we always a little skeptical about healing ministry, but I'm sure that God can heal people. I've seen at least a few times during my years of practicing medicine truly supernatural healing, which just it couldn't be explained from a scientific point of view. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your healing ministry?
All right. Probably the most common thing that I see, I pray for people's arms and legs. I see people, see God grow out their arms and legs. I see God do supernatural healing in their skeletal system. And many times they can feel God working in their body. That's probably the most common. Then I anoint with oil. I believe in anointing with oil. And I pray for all kinds of different healings, whatever the people want me to pray for. And then I see things happening, like an example just recently. I prayed this man who was playing basketball, and he had a rotator cuff, something wrong with his rotator cuff or something
rotator cuff of the shoulder, right?
Right, and he couldn't use his arm. And so I prayed for him, and God healed him, supernaturally healed him, and he's back playing basketball again. So I see God do a lot of healings. Okay, I'll give you an example, cancer and arthritis. Okay, cancer and arthritis can be demonic, and I'm not saying all cancer and arthritis is demonic. Many times it comes in through bitterness and unforgiveness, which is an open door for cancer and arthritis. And so when I'm ministering to a Christian, the first thing I'll do is I'll check them, you know, for bitterness and unforgiveness. And I have demons that manifest when I'm casting out cancer and when I cast out arthritis. I do that automatically with a family of bitterness. And sometimes I will feel their body manifest. I feel the demons manifest within their body. And so that's an example. That's a common example that every Christian who has cancer and arthritis should check to see if this came in through the demonic realm.
All right, fine. But how would you specifically check to see that?
Okay. The process that I do is I will, let's say that someone tells me that they have bitterness. I'll make it short. And so they have bitterness, they have unforgiveness, and they hate this person, they hate themselves, they hate their mother, their father, whatever. And so then let's say I get in, I find out, yes, they're in the family of bitterness. So what I'll do is I'll ask them, what are we dealing with here? And they'll tell me, you know, I hate my mother or whatever. And then I will take them through a prayer, and I'll have them forgive the people that they have bitterness or hatred or unforgiveness against. And then, once I've done that, I know that I'm taking away certain legal rights, certain grounds that the demons have. And then when I go through the family of bitterness, and demons fall in families, when I go through the family of bitterness, I'll automatically come against cancer and arthritis. Now, when I do that, sometimes I know they have cancer. They'll tell me they've got cancer, or they'll tell me they've got arthritis. And so I'll bear down a little harder on those when I know that they're there. And then sometimes I can tell when they meant. What I like to do is I like to put my hands on the top of a person's head. I'm left-handed. I lay my left hand on a person's forehead and my right hand on their shoulder, and I can tell certain things going on in their body. And so if a demon manifests the body, when I call out that spirit, then the body may move, and I can say, "Oh yeah, that cancer or arthritis is there," and the demon is manifesting, and so then I will come against that spirit a little longer and a little stronger.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest Gene Moody, who has the Deliverance Ministry, and he's been doing this for 30 years. Are you doing a lot more than before you retired?
Before I retired, I didn't take some trips overseas. I was gone for 38 days, my last trip to England and Ghana. And then, so that took up 38 days. Then, so actually, things have picked up. Since I retired and be able to give my full time to the Lord, I had 10 weekends in a row I was out of town. And the 10th weekend, it was canceled. I was supposed to go to Grand Rapids, and it was moved to Thanksgiving. So I'm supposed to go up there on Thanksgiving. So I do a lot of travel. Well, I do a lot of ministry over the telephone. You can cast demons out anywhere in the world over the telephone. And then I invite people in my home Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. by appointment. And then people come in over the weekend. I just had a couple from Raleigh. They came down, they spent the weekend with me, and I'll pick people up Friday at the airport and take them back Monday at the airport, or they'll drive. And so I do a lot of personal deliverance over the telephone in my home during the week and on the weekends if I'm not traveling.
Well, do you find that when, for instance, you mentioned you were in Ghana and Africa, and I spent some time living in Africa, and there's much more emphasis on the supernatural. I mean, certainly in the tribal areas, why there are all the witch doctors there. And of course, really all the people believe, at least the blacks believed in the witch doctors and the supernatural. And I always used to say they'd go to the witch doctor before they'd come to the white doctor, who was me, of course. And you'd see they'd have the witch doctor's burns on them, three little vertical burns where the witch doctor had been working on them. Did you find that there was much more emphasis and certainly much more demonic activity in Africa than there might be here? Or do you have any thought on that?
Well, it depends upon the country. I was in Ghana, which they have what they call fetish doctors there, and I learned about that, and I got involved in the spiritual warfare that was going on there. And then right next close to it is Nigeria. Nigeria, there's heavy witchcraft in Nigeria. There's heavy witchcraft in Africa, and depending upon what country you're in, how the people conduct themselves. In Ghana, they're sort of quiet. They're sort of quiet and easygoing about their witchcraft. And then they have their demonic customs, which tie in with the occult and whatnot. So I learned about their customs. I learned about the fetish doctors. They have, down there, for instance, they have water demons, which are strong. And so I ministered to some people individually. I taught corporately. And then we had spirits that were, coming to where we were in the place, the building we were in. And we got involved with that. So, yes, witchcraft is very prevalent in Africa, and it can be strong. It's very strong in Nigeria. And I might have underestimated in Ghana because I came back with walking pneumonia and prostate cancer. And so I might have taken witchcraft too easy. I might have been overconfident about their ability to get to me in Ghana.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things I've always been very aware of is that, at least until recent years, the overt demonic influence was not so much here. I think it has always been here, but it was not as apparent as it would be in other countries throughout the world, where, you know, the people openly believe in these demonic spirits, and of course sometimes they live in fear of them, and of course many of them people turn to Christianity because it's the only alternative to demonic possession. Well, our guest this evening is Gene Moody, and it's a fascinating. Gene, one more time, I want you to get your telephone number out there.
Yes, my telephone number is 225-755-8870. I'll repeat that. 225-755-8870.
Oh, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment as we prepare to wrap up this evening's program with Gene Moody. Different, but very important. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Gene Moody, and we have a couple of people on the line. Don't know if we'll get to them here in the last 3 minutes of the program, but we're involved in a spiritual battle, which is being fought on a educational, political, ideological, financial, cultural battlefield. Most people don't even know the battle is going on. Gene Moody, our guest this evening, is on the front lines of that battle, and he encounters these demonic spirits on a regular basis, and of course can enter into discourse with them, can actually talk to the demons. When the demons talk from people, sometimes do they talk with a different voice?
Yes, you might have, for instance, out of a woman, you might hear a man's voice, or out of a man, you might hear a woman's voice. They have different, different voices, different levels, different tones, and so forth.
Scare me to death if I heard that, but I know it happens. We've got Dana calling from Connecticut. Dana, do you have a quick question?
Yeah, I've been having a trouble with cigarette smoking. I wonder if that could stem from some kind of demonic possession.
He's having, well, of course, you probably have an addiction to these cigarettes. Do you think there's any demonic element to smoking, or is that simply another example of addiction?
Right, it's another example of addiction. There's spirits of nicotine. I like to smoke. I like the smell of smoke. Spirits of cigarettes. There's a family of demons that goes along with cigarettes.
Can you actually help people who are addicted to cigarette smoking?
Yes, if they really want to quit.
Beg your pardon?
If they really want to quit.
All right, fine. But you have to really want to quit.
Anything I can do, like any prayers or any...
Why don't you call our guest off the air? I think that might be the thing to do. Would you? Do you have his telephone number?
Yes, I do. 225-755-8870.
Correct.
Give him a call.
Okay,
I think that's,
thank you very
and,
much.
And Dana, you let us know what happens, will you?
Okay, yes.
Bye-bye. God bless. And let's go quickly to Peter, who's calling from... Winsboro, Texas. Peter, quick question.
Yes, Mr. Moody, when you cast out a demon, do you send the demon somewhere, or how does that go?
All right, what do you do with the demon when you cast him out?
Okay, normally, sometimes I tell them to go to the dry places, sometimes to the abyss, sometimes to Tartarus, depending upon how I feel. Or, I may not tell them to go anywhere. Typically, they go out and walk around in dry places.
Whenever I've been encountered with demons, Peter, I always tell them to go to the abyss. In fact, I order them to go to the abyss. And if you, of course, know the Lord, you can do the same. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks so much for calling. And certainly, our guest has been Gene Moody. Well, Gene, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a fascinating hour. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have as well.
Oh, I sure have, and I appreciate you inviting me, Dr. Stan.
And maybe I'd like to get you onto some of our other programs. I'll call you off the air, and I'd like all of our listeners to talk to you and at least know where they can go to get some help. God bless you for what you
do. God bless you. Be happy to do it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, I hope our listeners out there will really want to get the information. And, of course, if you'd like to know more about this, let me suggest a book we carry. We just started carrying it. It's called Hostage to the Devil. It's the story of 5 Catholic exorcisms, and it is one of the most gripping stories you've ever read. And it will make this whole subject of demonic possession a reality for you. Now, it's written by our good friend, former friend, Father Malachi Martin, and you can get the book by itself, or you can get the four-tape set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin, but I suggest you get the two of them together. We call it the Malachi Martin Special, and it's a special, a fairly good deal. We encourage you to understand that these demonic forces are working within all religions in the world today. And we really are involved in this spiritual battle. We talk about, of course, we carry the book The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. You can hear my interviews with her in the four-tape set on the supernatural. We have so many four-tape sets. You need to understand how they're poisoning our children with aspartame and with fluoride and with mercury. We have four-tape sets on all of those things. You have to understand so many of the facts of what they're doing to destroy the health of our people. There really are demonic forces out there. There is a plan to kill off the majority of the people in the world, and people say, that's crazy talk. Well, I suggest you go to my website and pull down my monograph. You can get it for nothing, called the Population Control Agenda Monograph. Or you can get a copy of that directly from Radio Liberty if you get some of the other items. We have a DVD or VHS on planned population reduction. We have a population control special with videos and four tape sets. You need to understand we're dealing with truly demonic forces. If you get our hidden agenda, our hidden agenda syllabus and our hidden agenda VHS. Why, of course, so many quotations are in there. You'll actually see the pages from Bertrand Russell's book where he tells you how wonderful it'll be if we could just have a black plague sweep the earth every generation. Or certainly the quotations from Jacques Cousteau. We don't actually have the pages from his writings, but we'll be glad to send you that to you personally if you just ask for it. The Jacques Cousteau quotation and from the UNESCO Courier, November of 1991, where he talks about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. He makes Adolf Hitler look like a piker. But, of course, we never mention that. Why are we so concerned about President Ahmadinejad when we're not concerned about somebody like Jacques Cousteau, who wants to eliminate 350,000 people a day? We're killing off the blacks in Africa with AIDS. In Botswana today, and if you'd like to see the pages from the report put out by your Census Bureau, which we have, why, of course, 46% of the pregnant women in Botswana are HIV infected, and they're all going to die. That is either the greatest public health failure of all time, or the most successful genocidal policy. And if it was a public health failure, you'd think they'd change things, but they're not going to. They're going to continue doing the same thing, which to me means it's a genocidal policy being funded with your tax money, ladies and gentlemen, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. I want to remind you about our seminar, all-day seminar on the 29th of October. I do hope you can come. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like one of our free newsletters, give us a call. If you'd like our catalogs on health issues or certainly on food storage for the difficult times that do lie ahead, especially as we move towards a war with Iran, which is insane. But, of course, our leaders know exactly what they're doing. I mean, war does kill an awful lot of people, doesn't it? Slaughters hundreds of millions.